There is a big shift going on this year in voting trends. The Black vote is more promising for the GOP than at any point in modern history, and Donald Trump is the reason for that. There's a lot to get into, and it is my profound honor to be addressing the subject with the one, the only, Judge Joe Brown. He is, without question, a guest of honor on the show, and it will be an interesting episode. I, of course, am the far less interesting Joseph Cotto, your host, and this is NewsSight. Judge Brown, thank you very much for being here.
Okay. Judge is in the house, I imagine you might say.
It's really something else. As I was telling the judge before we went live, I'm a great admirer of his program. It's a fascinating and entertaining introduction to the civil legal process. But Judge Brown nowadays does a lot of political commentating, and his home is here on Twitter, now called X. I typically ask people to introduce themselves, but Judge Brown is a man who needs no introduction. All the same, Judge, please tell people where they can find your stuff.
Okay, you can find me on X at Judge Joe Brown TV. There are a number of sites that are supposed to be me. As a matter of fact, I got permanently banned from Facebook because they say I was impersonating myself. I sent them a copy of the driver's license and a selfie they wanted within 10 minutes of the transmission, but they said it wasn't me. So anyway, that's nothing new. And also, in addition to Judge Joe Brown TV on X, you can find one of the products I sell, which is Judge Joe Brown Barbecue Products. That's JJBBBQ.com. You can go online and order it, or if you have Amazon Prime, for example, gives you free shipping, and you can order the stuff on Amazon. It's the best you will have ever had unless you make it yourself. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing, and I'm sort of busy in retirement trying to aggravate people who need to be aggravated.
Well, Judge Brown definitely has transitioned to the digital media world quite well. He does. He appears on many shows. He's a frequent guest on a live stream on Twitter. I believe The Real Dana is where people find your appearances there.
Well, it's on X. YouTube. X Face. That's usually Tuesday, and it's actually under my name with The Real Dana. She produces and directs, and we also do a thing on Monday and Thursday. And on Friday, I do something with a young lady named Valerie Denise Jones. It's called The Judge Joe Brown Show. It's radio, call in, and it's edited and syndicated on iHeartRadio the following week. It's all the way from Australia to London to Berlin to you name it. It's out there. So, yeah. And you can catch the reruns, which I suppose are good for residuals. Yeah, that helps. YouTube and a number of other sources. Check your local television station or on cable. You can get it. So check it out. You can find me if you are too young to know who I was. Or if you want to remember me, there I am. We have a few episodes that are still out there. So anyway, JJBBBQ.com or Judge Joe Brown TV.
Well, it's something else. We're going to obviously be getting into politics, but something else that you have your own line of barbecue sauce, because I was actually looking at a conversation on Twitter, I think a few months ago, and some people They were black. They were saying that it's a shame we don't even have our own barbecue sauce brand. They thought that Sweet Baby Ray's was a black-run business. But of course, it's not. And I think I told them, you know, Joe Brown has his own barbecue sauce. And it's really interesting that with the immense role that barbecuing plays within the black community, I had never heard until your line came out of a black-run barbecue sauce company. So this is definitely something big, and I'm really glad to see it.
Well, yeah. Barbecue is an interesting thing. See, at one point, it was considered ill-mannered, crude, and awful for what you were cooking your food over to make its way into the taste of the food. Well, in the colonial frontier situation, Americans turned it to an art form. So it's all about how you cook it, really, not really the sauce, but you don't want to detract from it. So what you cooked the meat with and wound up seasoning the meat with is how barbecue got started. So it's kind of taking the crude thing to becoming the point of the thing. We have these transitions. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad.
Indeed, life is a series of transitions. And politically, as well as culturally, we are definitely going through a transitional period right now. You know, it's something else, how an unprecedented number, at least in the modern age, of black voters are receptive towards Donald Trump. And before I get into my monologue, which you will, needless to say, share your far more interesting opinions on, you write about something very often called the rainbow cult. And I think it's a fascinating subject matter that could be a show in and of itself. But basically, you make the argument that the modern LGBTQ plus movement is a religion, a civil religion that does not run afoul technically of the separation between church and state because it's not recognized as an organized creed, but it has the same effect as an organized creed exercising dominion over the federal government. And a lot of black voters, particularly black males, definitely are not pleased by the advent of rainbow cultism. And I think that this is definitely one thing among others, which is driving them into Donald Trump's quarter. Anything to say about my perspective, Judge?
You didn't go far enough. It is a religion. It's not the practice of homosexuality. It's the cult, LGBTQIA+. Plus, the I is intersectionality, where all of the mess develops. And there's actually an apparent resistance amongst the gay community. The LGBTQIA is a cult. It is, to all intents and purposes, a religion. Now, to illustrate the point, consider Buddhism. That's an ancient and honorable religion, but it has no God. It's a system of philosophy, it's spirituality, whatever you want to call it. In the same sense, you have the rainbow cult. It is being imposed as the official religion of the United States by its acolytes, disciples, and followers who have achieved significant positions in the political arena, in the communications industry, entertainment industry, and now the news media, and also, thanks to a number of other factors, in the finance community. Now, you cannot put a nativity scene in a city hall. You run into problems if you try to put it in a public school. But you can have a rainbow all day long, all over, splashed over the walls in your public schools. The White House is lit up in rainbow colors. You have a rainbow flag flown illegally under a flag on a flagstaff under the American flag in an embassy or a consul. And it's illegal to do that. You have no cross flying under that flag on a government building. You have no crescent in a star. You have no six-pointed Hebrew star. You have no six-armed Hindu god. You have no image of Buddha. displayed under the American flag, but you have the symbol of this cult displayed everywhere. Now, to understand the gravity of this, it is a way of looking at life where it's nihilistic. It's an anti-everything. It is a culture of self-hate where people don't like what they are and they want to be something else. It is a thing that abdicates duty, honor, obligation, responsibility, accountability, public peace, dignity, and order, ethics, morality, sense of purpose, and cause. There is to be no shame, no guilt, anything goes, and that's sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater because somebody doesn't want there to be any standards to interfere with their hedonistic pursuits. Now, some of you may have had a mama that says if you don't go to church, synagogue, mosque, temple on Sunday or Saturday, Friday, whatever the holy day is, you can't go anywhere else the rest of the week. Well, you've got preschoolers, kindergartners, first grade, all the way through 12th grade. They are in these temples for 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. And there's a rainbow flag, there is rainbow propaganda, there's rainbow indoctrination, enculturation, socialization, imposition of value systems, and it's not good for the country because it's essentially, one, violating church and state, and if you can't have the traditional religions, there is no reason, no rhyme, no whatever to justify having a new one that is particularly as nihilistic as this one is. At least most of the rest of them stand for some principle, some self-imposition of standards and constraints, whereas this one does not. It's anything goes. You have a float doing a pride parade, and the males are naked, and the boys and girls are encouraged by silly mothers to hop up on the float and pull the penises of the participants. It's rather sickening. Not only is that an instance of inappropriate sexualization of children, that is another example of the catechism that goes along with it. The formalities, the rites and rituals of the thing. And it's not good when you get people trying to be a fake. Now, our president, who's been strongly pushing this movement, declared Easter Sunday of all days in an order he executed 2 days before to be Transsexual Recognition Day. Now, that sounds like an oxymoron to me because transsexuals are faking it. So how are you supposed to recognize something that is camouflaging, in fact, faking or mimicking something else other than what it is? It doesn't fit. So we have somebody that is supposed to have gone to church more during his time in office than any other chief executive of the country has in the last 70 years. And on Resurrection Day, he pushes Transsexual Recognition Day, Tranny Recognition Day. It seems like it's a mess. And then he has to spin by his flunkies who, well, not his flunkies, his handlers who come and try to explain what he says. They say, well, it's an ongoing occasion, so it wasn't necessary. Well, if it wasn't necessary, why did he issue a specific executive order on the 29th of March to celebrate something 2 days later on the 31st of March? That's crap. He was trying to get political gain from it. But that also is a situation that's hooked up with something that is tragic, and it is spreading through our society, and that is the destruction of the traditional nuclear family. That's what the rainbow cult is about. So here we have somebody that is trying to say we are acolytes behind destroying your nuclear family. And then you have black males, black men who are saying, we're getting cut out of this, and what we are getting rammed into our faces is their poster child, which you can see readily if you watch Fannie Willis and that debacle down in Fulton County, Georgia. That's what the Democratic Party is attempting to foist on the American public as its leadership. Whether you're talking about, what's her nickname, Beetlejuice, Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, whether you're talking about Maxine Waters, whether you're talking about Stacey Abrams, whether you're talking about a boy, I guess, tranny edition of it. That's his business, I suppose. This is America, and you have First Amendment rights of expression. Cory Booker and Al Sharpton and such likes are fostered on the public who are trying to get away from standards, trying to get away from what is their favorite thing. There should be no guilt, no shame. Well, I think those are good things, because guilt and shame are internalized control mechanisms. Toxic masculinity, and excuse me, but masculinity is a set of standards and behavioral axioms that are put into the heads of a young boy while he's growing up. So he self-adjusts, he self-controls, and he does, for the most part, what is required of him as a man. And he feels intense guilt and shame if he deviates from these internalized standards of conduct. And we don't have that, so we have freaks who shoot up hallways and the hoods. And then the solution is, instead of working on the character, somehow or another, this nihilistic anti-everything movement is supposed to say, take the guns away. The guns can shoot themselves. And, well, I've had martial arts for 58 years, and I can get my John Wick on. And most of the people I know as close associates, they can kill you without walking into a room with a weapon. So what are you going to do with them? License them or ban them to some cellar someplace or dungeon? You can't.
Oh, Judge, I believe you are muted. I can see you, but I cannot hear you. Sometimes that happens. Fascinating commentary. Let me see here. I believe Judge Brown is muted, which is interesting because it doesn't show that his mic is off on my end. But maybe if he hops out and hops back in, the situation will correct itself. But that is what often happens. I believe he can
hear me. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Everything is great now.
You hear me? I can't hear you. I'm going to have to go out and come back in. All right?
Yep. No problem. Yep. Well, I'm at least glad I was able to hear the judge. It's a shame that his fascinating commentary was cut short by tech issues. But no, I don't think there are any conspiracy theories going on. I don't think anybody needs to get into that. But it's something else, obviously, that the development of human beings and their socialization relates so much to everything that comes of their existence. And yet, this is something so terribly overlooked by the powers that be. Can you see and hear me, Judge?
I hear you now.
Excellent. Please continue. Or actually, please continue. Can you hear me? Now you can hear me. It's a momentary thing that comes up on Judge Brown's end. It's tech. What are you going to do? But he should be able to resolve it by popping out and popping back in. What are you going to do? That's life. But I really think it's interesting, the character angle here that's so often crucially overlooked. And it's obviously overlooked for opportunistic reasons. People don't want to focus on that. They'd rather focus on issues that are more self-serving, politically viable, however you want to put it. So that's the situation there as I perceive it. And it's what I believe for some time. But Judge Brown was putting it in a particularly eloquent fashion, which is greatly appreciated. We will be getting into, needless to say, the rise of the black vote in Donald Trump's favor it is something that is absolutely of interest to me. And I know that the shifts in the black vote are of interest to Judge Brown as well. He's played some role in articulating views of basically it's not conservatism, but an overlap with a sort of American populism that resonates with many, many blacks, especially black men, but and a growing number of black women too. It's I wouldn't have expected it, but it's happening. And Judge Brown, please correct me if I'm wrong. You basically note this populism and you say it's not part of American conservatism, but it definitely dovetails with what Trump is doing and yeah. is creating a new voter Trump, base, essentially.
Trump is rescuing masculinity and decency. And he's getting away from these acolytes of this new secular religion that are trying to impose a nihilistic, negative, self-hate thing on the country and get rid of the nuclear family, which is part of this long movement that's been going on for the last 50 years nationally and in particularly in the black community to get rid of men and to have single parent female heads of households with no fathers involved in the process, which is not good. There's another thing with Trump. It's not really the Republican Party because the Republican Party seems very reticent to adopt what Trump is pushing, which is, as you correctly observe, a form of populism. I had a political science major at UCLA, amongst other things, vertebrate paleontology, military science, and physics. I had varied interests, but I wound up with a political science major for a number of reasons. So in the analysis that I would develop for that, we have a problem. And black men and a lot of America are beginning to see this, as is the world. And it is simply this. There is a group of people that's trying to push this cult on the whole world. And by the way, Putin is campaigning internationally with two strong points that he is opposing relative to U.S. foreign policy. And it is, one, they're trying to stop the revision of Nazism / fascism in Ukraine. And the other thing, believe it or not, is the imposition of this new religion known as, I call it the rainbow cult. People don't like that around the world because it's like you have a right to do what you want in America under the First Amendment. But when the government starts trying to force that down other people's throats, pun intended, they don't like the rape aspect of it and say, we don't want it because it destroys a whole lot of what keeps humanity where it is. And it got us from cave to condo. Now, that said, the Republican Party does not know how to get away from what it's doing, but there is MAGA. Make America Great Again. And what we're looking at is another thing, which is the rise of perhaps a third party already structured, financed, and with somebody who is, in effect, the head of that party who has the likelihood of being the next president. That's MAGA splitting off from the Republican Party, which is what some people want, a viable third party alternative to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The Democratic Party can be characterized again, as I said, with Fannie Willis. And if you look at that debacle down in Fulton County, Georgia, you get the idea. Corruption, arrogance, narcissistic presumption of correctness. Frankly, just a side comment on it, I've been in this law business for more than 50 years, and that's the dumbest dumb crook mix I've ever seen. She keeps talking about her rights as a black woman, and the point is you didn't have to answer to anybody. You're black, aren't you? You were in charge. The sheriff of your county is black. The majority of your city council is black. Everybody that runs everything is black. So where's the white supremacy? That's on you. And you set yourself into a situation where you reveal the conflict, which he says developed after the appointment of Mr. Wade, But the problem with that is that makes it worse. You're not only an attorney with ethical constraints, which means on his part, you keep it in your pants, and her part, keep your legs closed, because you have an obligation of accountability and ethics that you owe to the people who elected you and as officers of the court to the court. So why didn't you refrain from getting involved? If it happened after the fact, like you say, why didn't you bring it to the attention of the judge since you were officers of his court? You didn't do that, and then you kept it concealed. And you've raised a strong inference that since you only make 200 some thousand a year, and he's been paid $720,000 of tax money already that you have not challenged in any fashion in terms of its claim, there is a good likelihood that you two have entered into an illicit agreement to sign off on money that you're going to get kickback on so you can soak the public. It's likely anywhere from $3 to $7 million will be made out of this, and you got to take on pay of 200 grand. Looks a little strange. Also, there are all kinds of accusations of bribery in that county and a whole bunch of things that are going wrong. And the sheriff just filed a civil action in a family domestic violence court claiming that some of the citizens are harassing him by claiming in social media that his administration is embezzling public funds. You can't do that. If they ever read the Constitution, they swore to uphold, but they did it. So it's becoming extraordinary what you're seeing in that county and the arrogance. And a lot of black men are just saying, oh, hell no, that's not the way we want to go. A lot of Americans are saying that's not the way we want to go. And the point I was making is we're drifting toward fascism. We've got a group that singularly is against someone being able to defend themselves. So they feel helpless and they look at bullying as somebody simply talking about them. What was the old thing? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And you want to kill yourself because somebody's talking about you. Get over it. Get stronger. And the deal is we do not need to destroy our First Amendment, freedom of expression, press, discussion, assembly, and debate because somebody's feelings get hurt. So they are imposing the methodology of fascism in order to silence any opposition so they don't have to go through the discomfort of being opposed by the overwhelming majority of the people who don't buy into what they're trying to sell or impose. And that is fascism. So fascism and communism, by the way, use the same methodologies, but they have totally different purposes. Fascism typically tries to advance the interest of a small group. In this case, the rainbow cult, its acolytes, disciples, and adherents, to the discomfort, inconvenience, and to the negative effects on such important things as the family, public peace, dignity, and order, appropriate behavior, being dedicated to something outside of self, and being willing to sacrifice for the good of the many. That is something that's being abandoned for a selfish pursuit of someone's pleasure. And it's not something you cannot resist because anytime they did anything with each other, if that was the case, it would be rape. But because it's consent, if you can consent to it, you need to consent to it, then it's volitional. It's by choice. So don't give me that. You can't resist it. That would have been an interesting defense in all of the rape cases I had to dispose of on the bench, criminal bench, not TV stuff. Because they couldn't resist it, so that becomes a defense? Oh, heck no. And too many women have fought too hard to get equality in their sports and in the job place, so failed boys who can't cut it on the masculine side, they get to put on sports bras and beat up on the girls, or let's say somebody says, I employ a balanced workforce, 50% women, 50% men. Of course, 25, well, one-fourth or one-half of the women they still have penises, and technically they're male, but they claim to be female, so I have to call those females because they claim. So what happens is 75% of the workforce is male and 25% female, but you ladies can't complain because some of those males claim to be female. See, that's a real slippery slope, and it's not fair to anybody, and it's just indulgence that does not need to be there. They have a right to do what they want to do. And as I'm fond of saying, get your freak on in your bedroom. It's your business and nobody else's, as long as you don't send anybody to the hospital. So leave it at that. Stop trying to force that on everybody else and get rid of all of the standards that make a society a viable one instead of one that is decaying and become decadent and depraved. Now, that said, Mr. Trump represents somebody that'll straighten this out. He represents somebody who's in charge. Now, let's take Mr. Biden. Mr. Biden has been on the civic public payroll for his whole adult life. He hasn't done anything of particular significance except be part of the disastrous 79 crime bill, not just the 94. The 81 crime bill, the 87 crime bill, the 91 crime bill, and the 94 crime bill that everybody lays at his feet. He's been a general hack and an incompetent, and he's become a multimillionaire on a civil service salary. That does not compute. And I actually have read the three downloaded laptops, not one. Hunter didn't just leave one, it was three. And I've read them, and there's a lot of incriminating information in there. And somebody, from my perspective, is a former prosecutor, ran the public defender's office for Memphis in private practice since the late 70s, criminal court judge. Somebody needs to be in jail. And that person sits in the Oval Office right now. One of the interesting things about what's going on in Florida, by the way, about the, what shall we say, the classified documents, is the case has already been decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1988. It's called the United States Department of the Navy versus Egan, E-G-A-N. Now, there are multiple concurring opinions, but Google seems to have taken most of them down, except the head opinion. But the other concurring opinions established this point. As Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Services and Chief Diplomat of the United States, under the Constitution, the President, not the Vice President, has absolute and unlimited authority to classify or declassify anything he wishes. That is the same power, essentially, the president has when it comes to pardon. He can pardon anybody for any purpose without question. Now, from what I read on those laptops, or the downloaded laptop information, what was sought by the Biden administration through the archivist was incriminating information against them. So as president, Trump had the authority to declassify it, quote, by any means he chose, partially or completely. So he removed them from the White House. That's partial declassification. Is he supposed to give it to the archivist? Well, the case on that is not 1988. It is 1803, 221 years ago. And the name of the case is Marbury versus Madison, one of the most important cases in American history, which says a court may declare an act of Congress or any other legislative body unconstitutional. And when the president is confronted with an unconstitutional act of Congress, he is under no obligation to obey it. In fact, has an affirmative obligation to disregard it. The act that says he has to yield his presidential authority to some archivist and his discretion as chief executive of the country is unconstitutional, blatantly so. Therefore, he was under no obligation to comply with it. So we have a case in Florida that is totally meaningless. It's simply brought there to keep the man from being able to adequately campaign to drain his financial resources and occupy his time, which is as the case that we see in New York dealing with, paying Miss
Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, I won't use her name. I don't want to expose you to liability because that's their game. But he's supposed to have bribed her to be silent. Now, in law school, first year, and that's been almost 55 years ago, they taught us if you wanted analyze a case, flip the script and take it the other way. Now, what is it called when you have to pay somebody not to embarrass you? It's called blackmail. So you have a former president of the United States of America under indictment for being the victim of a blackmail attempt. Now, and matter of fact, he paid the blackmail, but that's no crime. That just makes somebody else the felon. Next thing, he is a corporate entity that's indicted because it didn't give a full report of the nature of the settlement. Well, everybody was under a court order to keep that quiet. So if the corporate entity had followed the seeming requirement to fully disclose, it would have been in violation of a court order. So you got a corporate entity indicted for following a court order. That's a strange series of events. You have a president supposedly forced to trial on April 15th in the midst of a presidential campaign because some knucklehead fascist decided that they were going to intervene and deprived the entire country of their opportunity to select a viable chief executive. And the charge is because he was a victim of blackmail and the corporation followed the law. Wow. The other thing, too, is this thing that he posted the bond on the other day is going to be knocked out on appeal because the basis is going to be verdict inconsistent with the evidence. There was not one single shred of evidence in that case to show that Donald Trump did anything fraudulent. He engaged in ordinary practice. The bank did not rely upon him, but did its own independent investigation, and there's no victim. The bank says, we got our money when we expected it. We do this all the time. This is the business practice, and it's like, I write you a check, you take it to my bank and cash it, and then the DA says, Joe Brown wrote you a bad check. No, it didn't. I cashed it. Well, we say it's a bad check, so we're going to trial on it. Your Honor, it's a bad check. Yeah, I agree. Well, wait a minute. We got our money. This is the way we do business. Been doing business with him for a long time. Well, I'm sorry. It's a bad check. Now, the other thing is, be careful what you're rooting for. If you say, oh, bad Trump, they got him. Well, guess what this fool Letitia Jay said as a precedent? Have you ever been possessed of equity in a home or owned a home in terms of its property interest outright, and you're trying to get a second mortgage to finance a business? Are you trying to sell it? What do? You want to get all you can out of it. Do you go into the bank and say, I want to undervalue my house? You try to get as much for it or as much credit or collateral or security as you can get for the house. That's just what everybody does. And then the other thing is, it certainly doesn't hurt the public because if you drive the value of something up, you get taxed on that, which means the taxpayers get more taxes paid into the tax agencies for that government, local, state, or federal. So nobody's hurt. It's just we want to get rid of this guy because we think he's evil. Well, I'm sorry. There are other people in the country besides you, and it's not going to stand. But it's this kind of thing right now where somebody forgot what the devil the Bill of Rights is supposed to be about. So we have these people that are violating the spirit of the Bill of Rights, which was designed to keep the government from using its power to politically, socially, or economically, or culturally oppress another people or person. And that's exactly what they're attempting to do, and all of them are foul. We've got this other thing coming up here that a lot of black men and some black women and all a lot of Americans are saying is bad. We've got these illegal immigrants. Now we have Homeland Security's chief declaring that we can't use the term illegal immigrants anymore. Well, to hell with you. This is the First Amendment. I'm a defiant American citizen. Illegal immigrant, criminal. They crashed the border. They engaged in a criminal act of felony, and everybody that gives them aid and comfort or sets up a sanctuary city, a sanctuary area, or gives any assistance to that or support is guilty of a federal felony and ought to be prosecuted, no matter who you are, especially if you're holding office and you've sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the country. So we've got a real bad thing going, and black men as American citizens who have served in the armed forces, served in the government, served in elected office, served as good citizens, paid taxes, done what they ought to have done to raise families, engage in gainful enterprise, we and everybody else that is an American is offended when somebody wants to subvert our laws and try to impose something that is a totalitarian government. Now, way back when, I had a Russian professor, and this woman was very interesting. She used to tell us, and this was back late 1960s, she said, America is in grave danger of becoming a fascist nation. Not from some jackboot-wearing, goose-stepping, uniformed thugs, but from some well-meaning, pink-panty-wearing, long-haired beatniks who would willingly impose the worst of fascism on the rest of the country to protect themselves and to protect you from being something other than what they are. And here we are right now, 55 years later.
That is something else. I think her warning, to say the least, was timely, and that's putting it mildly. There's so much to get into with what you said, and a lot of it relates to what I'm about to address, which is my monologue, although, of course, Judge Brown's opinions are much more intriguing, but he'll be sharing his views about what I say. In the realm of American politics, a seismic shift is underway, one that has caught many by surprise and left political analysts scrambling to comprehend its significance. Recent data from Quinnipiac University reveals that President Trump's support among black voters stands at 23%, a figure that could mark a historic departure from the norm. If these numbers hold, it would mean that President Biden could become the first Democratic nominee since the civil rights era to earn less than 80% of the black vote, making this upcoming election a potentially transformative event in our nation's history. The catalyst for this unexpected turn of events lies in the aftermath of recent legal battles. Donald Trump, once viewed with disdain by many minorities, has emerged as a figure of admiration and even heroism among certain segments of the population. Patrick Basham, a respected pollster from the Democracy Institute, attributes Trump's newfound appeal to the weaponization of the legal system, a strategy that has resonated deeply with working-class Americans, particularly those in minority communities. It's a remarkable phenomenon, one where young men proudly display Trump posters featuring his infamous mugshot, viewing him not just as a political figure, but as a symbol of resistance and resilience. The failure of the Democratic establishment to anticipate this shift is glaring. Rather than being ostracized, Trump's legal battles have elevated him to martyrdom in the eyes of many minority voters. This oversight underscores a fundamental disconnect between the Democratic Party and the concerns of minority communities, a gap that Trump has skillfully exploited to his advantage. There's more to say, but Judge Brown, anything to say about what I have brought up?
I agree with it. That's a pretty good assessment. It's like people are getting fed up with what they're looking at. And if you want to see it, you can Google this. Look up Animal Farm by Orwell. Don't want to find the book. You want to find the animation that the CIA issued in 1952. And it was supposed to be distributed in communist countries behind the Iron Curtain that Churchill had noted developed, okay? Animal Farm is about some animals that stage a revolution and they take this farm over from the humans. And they set up a pretty good Bill of Rights, a constitution. And unfortunately for the whole enterprise, some pigs decide that they want to be superior and take things over. So they recruit packs of wild dogs to their cause, and they start imposing what is totalitarianism on the other animals. Now, on the side of this barn, they have the Constitution written. And one of the things that's on there says, all animals are equal. Well, after this has been going on, the animals are aghast when they wake up one morning and things have been altered. That slogan has been changed, and it now says all animals are equal, slash, but pigs are more equal than others. And that's kind of what we're getting right now. Some people in our society are deemed to be more important than others, and they have advantages and opportunities that the rest of us do not get. And we are being subjected to an increasing level of fascist, totalitarian type governance, a restriction in what we can say. You can't use certain words on YouTube, for example, without getting consequences. And the words you choose to use may be on every headline in America that morning and all of the daily newspapers, such few as still remain, but you can't use them. So what is that? You have algorithms that shadow block you because some people may feel uncomfortable at what you have to say. Well, the First Amendment has never embraced restriction of speech because you make somebody feel uncomfortable. And the only restrictions outside of certain requirements that exist perhaps during wartime, when there's a declared war, is obscenity, where the appeal is to prurient interest. Now we are finding that there is active and vigorous restriction to just free discussion of economic ideas, political ideas, ideas about raising children, ideas that have nothing to do with matters of prurient interest. They just deviate from the official party line, which is poison. So somewhere along in here, people are saying enough is enough. I'm sick of this. And as I am fond of telling some people, I said, look, when one party will be guaranteed your support, no matter what they do not do for you, and the other party can be guaranteed that it will not get your political support no matter what they try to do with you, neither party has an incentive to do a damn thing for you. So do what everybody else does in the country to say, oh, hell, we'll rebel and punish one party for presuming that they own us. That sounds very much like what was on a slave plantation. So I say, look, free your mind and no fences except inside your head. Walk off the plantation. Nobody owns you. You don't have to act like a devoted lap dog wagging your tail, waiting to get your belly scratched and get some treats, you know, and come walk up to somebody with your leash in your mouth saying, can you please put the leash on me so we can go out for exercise? See, a lot of people are saying, no, we're not going for that. And that's what you're getting. And that's spreading across the country, and it is spread across the world. So we've got a big problem. We've got incompetence when it comes to foreign diplomacy. We've got a vice president who grins like a hyena, and she throws what the Europeans and everybody else in the world calls word salad out there. In other words, she chops it up and there's no order. There's no message there. It's just hee-hee-hee-hee. Everything is giggle funny. And you throw words and phrases out there that have no real meaning and nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. So what time is it? And you got a rebellion. And I hope this rebellion is a strong one, because people who make this kind of presumption against anybody, any group of people in the United States, need to be punished for the presumption.
The presumption that the Democrats basically own the black vote is a very strong one within the Democratic Party and also within the GOP. And it has produced the sort of situation you mentioned, which is very bad for American blacks, because neither party has incentive to do much in the way of earning support from the black community. And that brings about, actually, it's a great segue into what I was about to say. Recent polling data from the New York Times and Siena College paints a troubling picture for Democrats, especially regarding their support among black voters. Despite playing a pivotal role in securing President Biden's victory just 3 years ago, black voters now express growing disillusionment with the Democratic Party, feeling neglected and frustrated by what they perceive as a lack of meaningful action on issues that affect them most. The numbers speak volumes. In six key battleground states, 22% of black voters indicate they would support Trump in the next election, compared to 71% for Biden. This represents a remarkable shift considering Trump's historically low levels of support among black voters in previous elections. The fact that Trump now commands double the support he received in 2016 underscores the magnitude of this transformation. So what's behind this surge in support among black voters? It's a complex interplay of factors, including Trump's unorthodox approach to politics, his focus on economic empowerment, and his willingness to challenge the status quo. Despite facing criticism from some quarters, Trump's policies have struck a chord with a significant portion of the black community, leading to a groundswell of support that few could have foreseen, myself included. Other polls corroborate this trend, with 17% of black voters nationwide expressing an intention to vote for Trump, an unprecedented level of support for a Republican candidate in modern times. This surge isn't limited to Trump alone. A sizable portion of black voters also express openness to alternative candidates, signaling a broader dissatisfaction with the political establishment as a whole, although especially the Democratic Party, given how the America's black community has traditionally voted. So really interesting. I mean, it's fascinating what's going on. Judge Brown, anything to say about it?
It's a paradigm shift. People are coming back to the center. And there's one other thing, too. See, what the Democratic Party is standing for is they're being anti-humanity. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And when you have somebody that says, I'm their enemy because I'm a human and I don't like what they're doing in terms of human terms, somebody over there saying the same thing, somebody over there saying the same thing. Hey, it's a wonderful opportunity for the country to become unified in opposition to a distinct threat to normal society. Now, I'm not saying people don't have a right to do what they want to do in their homes and in private, but hey, nobody else can go out and do the lewd and lascivious stuff that you see done in public, and nobody can try to push it on anybody's children, but they get a chance to because of what's going on. So that's one reason to just say, hey, I don't care what you about anybody else. We'll worry about that later. Let's sit down at this table and do something about this problem. And if you want to see how it works, see an old World War II black and white picture where you've got Winston Churchill over here representing a monarchy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt representing a democratic republic, and Joe Stalin over here representing a totalitarian communist republic. So they become enemies to an extent in the short time, but they unify. So Joe, Franklin, and Winston can go after Tojo, Benito, and Adolf. And they whip Adolf, Benito, and Tojo and get rid of the threat. Then they can resolve their other differences. So right now, we're back to the same thing again. We have to retain the thing that has made the country great. And see, that's it. Make America great again. Duty, honor, obligation, responsibility, accountability, sense of purpose, morality, ethics, dedication to public peace, dignity, order, and you have sense of purpose and cause. So we are not perfect. We're working on getting our thing together, but it's coming along. It's a lot better than it used to be, in spite of what some of the far left pundits want everybody to think. But no, the country is not about defunding the police. It's not about anything goes, because people come home after a hard day's work and find all of their stuff gone because somebody burglarized them. Some people who have led decent lives, when they get to visit their grandchildren, have to put them in a bathtub where there is some sheet iron between them and bullets that may come through the window on a drive-by, because there is no character being built in the neighborhood, because you've taken all of the fathers out of the equation and made people dependent on a welfare state.
Oh, I believe Judge Brown's audio has cut out again. It happens, one of those things. And it's, I mean, everything he's been saying is so interesting. But it was the point that he was making about welfare statism destroying the Black community is, it's a great one. It's a very sad point, but it's a great one. You also see it destroying other communities as well. Issues that were once thought to be limited to the American Black inner city are now found readily even in white rural areas. Now, the violent crime rate may not be as high in these rural areas, but the fundamental problem is there. The same problem that you would see in the inner city. It's fascinating stuff. Judge Brown, please continue where you left off.
Okay. It's basically the same message. It's just the country is built on a foundation of hard work, duty, honor, and obligation. It is responsible for itself. It does not want Big Brother looking over your shoulder, over its shoulder, and telling it what to do. It can do it itself. We are dependent. We are people who thrived in a frontier situation where there was nobody around but you to depend on. And then we started being able to depend on each other. We got education that gave us a boost on the world. We had a drive and a spirit that seems to be getting hauled into the dump yard these days by people who don't want anything at all except license to do whatever they want to do rather than a compulsion being imposed mentally in terms of building character that says, rather than what I might feel like doing, what I need to do is what I ought to do. That's the difference. So is America going to return to what it ought to do, or is it going to go drift further into anything you feel like doing, no matter how bad it is?
That's a great question.
That's the question. And I think that's why Trump is surging in the polls. And the other thing is too much of the communications and news industry is now under the control of the other side. And we need to put that in perspective and do something about restoring a centrist situation. And that's MAGA, that's Donald Trump. And that's embracing the fact that no one party owns anybody and they do not have a monopoly on correctness. Now, one last remark on Mr. Trump. When I got on the bench in the early 90s, sometimes we take a trip to New York for recreational purposes or a conference, and some of the guys would say, hey, let's go to this, that, and the other New York club. So we go to the club. And Donald Trump would walk in with no bodyguards, no nothing, and he'd hang with everybody in there, seemed to be well at ease, and would hang with all of the black, white, brown, red celebrities and ordinary people. So I said, who is this guy? This was before he got that apprentice thing. I didn't even know who he was, but he seemed to be well at ease with everybody in the room. So that's the president of the United States. So he's not one of these gamesters. He's about real world business instead of somebody sitting back becoming rich off of the public payroll. Now, I'll say that. I've got a couple of places I got to get to dealing with. So
No problem. My monologue actually is about to enter its last sector, so the timing winds up working. In essence, Trump's unexpected resurgence among black voters serves as a wake-up call for the Democratic Party. It underscores the need for a more proactive approach to engaging with minority communities, a challenge that Biden's allies acknowledge they have yet to fully tackle. For Republicans, Trump's newfound popularity among black voters presents an opportunity for transformative change. It suggests a future where the GOP broadens its base and embraces diversity in ways previously thought impossible. By championing policies that resonate with minority communities and challenging conventional wisdom, Trump has ushered in a new era of Republican politics, one defined by inclusivity, empowerment, and opportunity. As the political landscape continues to shift, one thing remains clear. Donald Trump's journey from pariah to, among many, hero is a testament to the power of resilience, authenticity, and a message that resonates with ordinary Americans, regardless of race or background. Whether this shift represents a temporary anomaly or a harbinger of broader change remains to be seen. But one thing is certain. Trump's impact on American politics, particularly among minority communities, and especially within the black community, is far from over. And for Republicans eager to secure a victory in future elections, Trump's legacy offers both a roadmap and a rallying cry for the undoubtedly difficult journey ahead. Anything to say about the conclusion to my monologue, Judge? Oh, I don't know if Judge Brown can hear me. I think that I might have cut out on his end. I think the audio went out. But anyway, hopefully he'll be able to join us again very soon. Yeah, Judge Brown's audio is off. It's one of those things that happens. It's happened to me as well. Let me just see here. Let me try this. Can you hear me now, Judge? No, I don't think he can. Okay, let me try this. One moment here. But no, right as the monologue was being delivered, right as the end of my monologue was being delivered, the audio went out. Strange how that happens. It's one of those things, but what are you going to do? But I do obviously stand by everything I said. I think that Trump is a transformative figure, certainly in a way that I could not have foreseen as a lifelong Republican, as somebody who supported him since he went down the escalator in 2015. It's really unbelievable, the entirety of his situation. It's just something that is profoundly surprising, and that he not only was able to, win in 2016 as one of the few people who thought he would win, but that he was able to broaden his appeal in such a way that makes the Republican Party more viable to communities that, to say the least, it has had some difficulty in appealing to. It's been something else. It really has been. So that, to me, is it's good to see. It's definitely not a negative surprise, but it's the sort of thing that. It's the sort of thing that, goes to show there are unintended consequences. Sometimes they're positive, sometimes they're negative. In this case, I would say for the Republicans, they absolutely are positive. So that is my perspective there. Anyway, we were about to wrap up anyhow, but hopefully Judge Brown will be able to join in to share his last few thoughts before we go. But you know, technology is what it is. What are you going to do? It's part of life. But anyway, it's been an outstanding discussion. It really has been. And I am very thankful that Judge Brown was able to appear here to discuss his views. I mean, they are fascinating. They really are. His views are not widely disseminated enough. It's not surprising when you look at how the media treats certain people. I even struggle to find the words. It's just one of those things. And having people on to discuss these complicated issues on a show like this, on a platform like Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, is of paramount importance. It truly is. So anyhow, that is that's my perspective there. And I hope you all have gotten as much out of this discussion as I have. It has been really fascinating, even though there was the connectivity issue on Judge Brown's end. It's, you know, just one of those things. What are you going to do? But anyhow, so I really do have some reasonable hope that Trump will be able to, to do much better with the Black vote this time around. And he'll be able to improve with minority communities across the board. It would be it would be one hell of a thing, and it would definitely be counterintuitive because obviously he was regarded as somebody who would destroy minority support for the GOP for generations to come, so on and so forth. But anyway, like I said, sometimes there are unintended consequences, and people typically say that when the consequences are of a negative nature. But in this case, I think they would be very positive indeed. So anyway, we shall see. Folks, I do appreciate you stopping by tonight. I appreciate Judge Brown stopping by tonight, even though the technology has severed our connection. It's a pity he wasn't able to share any parting words. But his perspective, I think, is pretty well known, very clear all the same. And it really was an honor to speak with him. I hope to be able to speak with him again down the road about other timely topics. So there is that. And I really hope that you got quite a bit out of this discussion. We definitely will see what comes of the Black vote in this election cycle. It will be interesting, that's for sure. Anyway, folks, please stay safe, be well. Thanks for tuning in, and cheers.